Hey, what's going on, everyone? Thanks for tuning into the podcast, or if you're listening on YouTube, the channel. And I'm excited to introduce to you Irving Su, who is an account executive at Zendesk, who's been to President's Club, who's a top performer. He was promoted from a SDR position, and you've also worked at Nielsen as well. And yeah, I'm excited to have you here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast, Davidson. And yep, everything you've said was correct. And just happy to be on the show. And excited to have some great conversations today.
Yeah, shout out to Chantel Buford. Chantel and I used to work together at LinkedIn. I was lucky enough to be the account executive that she supported. So definitely love all of our conversations. She's such a real person, and you know, really enjoy her company and her presence and just all the insightful conversations we have. So thanks, Chantel.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chantel's been a great member to our team. And yeah, it's crazy how small this world is. And glad that we got this chance to connect through Chantel. Happy to see Chantel killing it at the career role as well.
That's awesome. Oh, and who's that?
Yeah, this is Yo-Yo. Sorry,
I've Yo-Yo.
Been away for a little bit, so she's been extra clingy ever since I've returned.
Yeah, how long were you away for?
I was away for originally. I was supposed to be away for a week to Colorado for snowboarding, but a snowstorm recently came over to Denver, so my flight was delayed for a day, and just got back to the Bay Area just last night.
Oh, it's only been a week?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought, yeah. But still, I'm sure like a week for her is a lot, right? Or is a Yo-Yo a guy or a girl?
She's a girl. Yeah. She's 8 years. She's turning 8 years old this year.
Aw. Yeah. Eight human years. Oh, okay. So yeah. So that's much older in cat years.
Right. She'd be probably like a grandma at this point.
I know when Chantel connected us, she says that like you're crushing it, you're like always one of the top reps, if not the top rep, and you just have really good positive energy. And yeah, she said that you guys would probably have a lot to talk about, so that, you know, that was the reason why she connected us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yep, I've been fortunate enough to consistently crush my numbers, and I'd love to kind of pass this energy and what I've learned throughout the role to any newcomers, new reps that are on the team. Winning as a team always feels much better than winning by yourself.
And would you be able to share a little bit about like making President's Club and what President's Club, because I know every company has like different requirements for President's Club,
right?
But at Zendesk, what does that mean?
Right. So at Zendesk, in order to make President's Club, the requirements are that you want to be the top 15% of quota carriers out of your segment. I'm an SMB rep currently at Zendesk, and was fortunate enough to really crush my numbers. I actually started as an account executive. I was promoted from the SDR position into an account executive last year around April, and I was able to hit, I believe, my Q2 number. I think it was either 200%, 300%, and that really accelerated everything and eventually got me into the President's Club by the end of the year.
Oh, very cool. Wow. So even though you had, but were you on a ramp in the beginning, or even without the ramp, you would have hit?
Right. So I was on ramp the very first month. And I think I got 300% that month. So even without the ramp, I probably still would have hit that month. And nice. And was just able to consistently hit my numbers throughout the year. And eventually that brought me to President's Club, and definitely fortunate to go through that experience and being able to share this with everyone.
And I'm assuming because of COVID, President's Club looks a little bit different this year.
Absolutely. So historically, I think making it to President's Club entails that you get to go on, you get to go to this destination spot, everything paid for, and you go on this bougie trip. But this year, it is a little different. I think we're getting some cold hard cash instead of the bougie experience.
Yeah, which you probably would have preferred that bougie experience, right?
Yeah, just so you have something for the gram.
Yeah, for the gram. Yep, it's all about the gram, right? It didn't happen unless it's on the gram.
Exactly. Now who's gonna know that I made it into President's Club?
I know, right? Sometimes it's like that branding and that, like, hey, I'm on, you know, gives you that credibility and just gives you that like cachet where it's like, you know, you kind of roll with like the heavy hitters, right? That's like half of the experience, I feel like.
Absolutely. And just being able to kind of network, even just within an organization, and talk to other reps that have been crushing in, I think that's another really valuable experience that you're able to get. But, you know, hopefully I'll make it again this year and eventually get that networking experience under the belt.
And how's it looking so far? You feel good about your chances of making it this year?
So far, so good. I'm on track. Been able to hit the past 2 months. I actually just hit my quarterly number yesterday. So far, so good.
That's awesome. Congrats. Yeah, I think that's a cool thing about sales. Like we all know and respect each other, people that have been grinding and have been at it, because we know how much effort and blood and sweat and all the what goes in right into hitting your numbers. So it's that mutual respect that no matter what company you work at, you know, like, hey, if you're a President's Club winner, like, we know that it wasn't easy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so funny that you say that, because I feel like sales has such a particular culture where there's so much grinding that happens on the back end that most people don't know about. And it's a lot of hard work, a lot of sweat, a lot of rejections, a lot of no's. When you do get that recognition, and when you do see the fruits of your hard labor, it's always worth it. And in my opinion, and it's just great being able to see that all the hard work you put in turned into something amazing.
Yeah. And I get that you're pretty humble too. Like, do you think humility is like an Asian trait? Cause I do notice it a little bit more with a lot of Asian AEs versus AEs first. That's account executives, for people who, you know, aren't in tech sales. Versus like, I mean, that's a pretty big generalization, but it's fair to say that that's a common trait amongst us.
Right. Great question. I would think so. I guess I am a pretty humble person, in general. I tend to put in the extra work until I feel confident about the work that I'm doing or the results that I'm satisfied with. So a lot of times I feel like I am quite harsh on myself. So having high expectations, oftentimes, I guess, when people compliment you or when people are saying that you're killing it, you know, most of the time I'd be like, you know what? I don't think so. You know, I feel like I'm just not quite there yet. And I think that's ultimately where the humility comes from.
What do you find that balance of like pushing yourself enough that you have higher standard, like a higher standard of excellence, but not where you're beating yourself up over like minor, maybe minute details? Or do you think that's actually what it takes to be like a Tiger Woods and a Michael Jordan, that you need to be so anal where like every nuance like you want to improve on?
I'd say if you're striving for greatness, then you do have to be super tough on yourself. In that aspect, I don't think I'm that tough on myself. I tend to look at the macro goals that I have and just seeing if I'm just on track in terms of moving towards that macro goal and not beat myself up through these micro goals that I've set for myself. So sometimes missing micro goals is okay if ultimately you are still going moving towards your macro goal.
Yeah, I like how you frame that. So you're able to see the big picture so that when there are little minor roadblocks and bumps, you're still able to get perspective and see the, hey, I'm still progressing towards, or I'm still pacing towards my bigger long-term goals.
Absolutely. And that even comes down to just trying to hit your monthly numbers. I feel like a lot of times, sometimes it's hard to know whether if you're going to hit your monthly number, your quarterly number. But if you're able to break that down into daily tasks, what your conversion rates look like, it becomes a little easier. If you know ultimately that your conversion rate is 1 out of 10 people would pick up your phone call, or you'll have a fruitful conversation, then you'll know in order to have 10 fruitful conversations, you need to make 100 calls. So having that on the back of your mind, I feel like that brings me a lot of peace when I'm making my daily task and whether if I'm on track towards hitting my goal for that month, for that week, even for the day.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think sales is 50%, like you said, the numbers, and then there's also the art of sales, which you can improve on every day. So how do you account for, like, let's say you are getting better as you get more comfortable into the role, do you account for like the conversion rate will be higher as well? Like, do you factor that into the formula?
Yeah, great question. I would say I adjust that based on my metrics on a quarterly basis. So I keep track of my lead volume, my conversion rates, and over time, if I'm seeing an increase in my conversion rate, then I take that into consideration when I'm planning out for any future calls, just future planning.
And so that's good. So that you are adjusting. This is a totally random question, but
sure.
What is it about? Is there something from Taiwanese culture that we could bring into like more of the westernized American culture that you think would serve us?
Yeah, it's interesting that you asked that. So I would say Taiwanese culture, humility is definitely a big one. And we just in Taiwan. So I've also had experience working in Taiwan, and Taiwanese people are just very hard workers in general. So they're, most of them just have high expectations of themselves, and you always want to kind of bring 100% when it comes to projects, your work. So I think it's just that responsibility that you have, feeling that you have to give 100%. So
you're saying Americans are lazy. Got it.
Not at all. I would say the culture is very different. But a lot of times that I think when it comes to American culture, a lot of people are able to work smarter, but not necessarily work harder. And sometimes that is a plus.
Yeah, I would say that's fair to say. I mean, this is a pretty blanketed statement, and I don't represent all Asians, right? But I do think that if I was to take at face value, I would say I'm often the hardest worker on my team, at most companies, and since I was little. And like you said, it does come from a, well, for at least for me, it does come from a, well, you know, I didn't start off with as many resources, so I had to work harder, right? Because I don't necessarily have that, like, that foundation or that baseline. It was ingrained in me, even when I was like 15, 16, 17, 18, I was working a lot, right? Which I think that's like uncommon in most US like culture.
Right. Absolutely. Sorry, I totally blanked out. think I had a question right there. Matt.
No
worries. Small brain fart over there.
Hey, you're not perfect. No one's perfect. It's all good.
No problem.
I'm curious. So it does sound like you take like a data-driven approach to it, which is great because then you're in control of your destiny. Like, how do you, because sales, I think, is interesting where you can get better every day. What's your process in just like improving? Like, do you listen to gong calls from other reps? Like, do you have a mentor? Like, do you talk to a lot of the mid-market / enterprise reps? Like, how do you go about that?
Great question. I'd say most of my craft honing skills is actually just through a lot of practice and reading a lot of books. I've been reading a lot of sales related books by Dale Carnegie.
Nice.
About negotiation, never split the difference. But a lot of it, I'd say most of it just comes from day-to-day conversations that I'm having with prospects. I think due to the space that I'm in, we are very volume heavy when it comes to deals, ops that we're working on. So just being able to talk to prospects in all these different industries, learning about use cases, that's really helped me. And recently we also gone through Sandler training. So I think that's also helped a lot. In terms of strategies that we can use and just being able to improve my craft when it comes to day-to-day conversations that we're having with prospects.
Yeah. And I think Sandler is definitely one of the most popular and I think one of the most effective. I think Dale Carnegie is, I think everyone should read Dale Carnegie. Were you referring to like How to Win Friends and Influence People?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And the other one was Chris Voss, right?
Yes, yep.
Exactly. What was your main takeaway from that book? Like if you were to maybe like summarize like a couple like actionable items for us from that book.
Right. So to be completely frank, I'm actually just halfway through the book right now. It's also a personal goal of mine to do finish all the books that I've started this year.
Yeah.
But one actual item I would say from that book really is to kind of be the second one never be the first one to bring up that price, you know. Always have that leverage on your end and always provide that. So when it comes to sales, it always comes down to give and get, you know. Never provide something for free without getting something in return.
That's good feedback because too often our customers or our prospects want more value, right? And you're giving it to them, but let's say you're spending a lot of time with a client, but they haven't necessarily met you halfway.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably time to cut and then just move on, right? I think sometimes we try to hedge our bets and we try to fit something that doesn't fit in the hole,
right?
Like a square peg in a round hole. And I think so many of us still make that mistake even after being in sales for as long as we are.
Yeah, I agree 100%. One of the biggest things I've learned from sales is that you can't really force anything. Prospects will buy on their own terms. And really, I'd say the best ops I've worked on is really you're creating that partnership between you and the customer, and you're setting expectations early so you're able to leverage the give and gets. So it's not that you're working for the customer, but oftentimes you want to be working with the customer to find the best solution based on their use case or the challenges that they're facing.
That's a good point. I think many of us try to work things out in our head or on our own. Like we assume things, we're like, well, maybe this is because this is what it's like for everyone else, right? So we think And sometimes people that are experienced do that, right? Because we've had so many experiences. So we just think, oh, okay, they fit into this mold, they fit into this box. But reality, every client has their own needs and everyone has their own thing. So sometimes like that fresh set of ears is a fresh mind is better because we can just start without like having preconceived notions or assumptions or anything like that.
Right. Absolutely. And just being, you know, naturally curious about things, I think that also helps a lot. If you're truly curious to learn what your prospects' pains, what challenges they're facing, and how you're able to actually help them with a solution that your company offers, I think that's oftentimes one of the best feelings that you get. And, you know, getting that email afterwards, you know, thanking you that, hey, thank you so much for really listening to our problems and finding a solution for us. I think that's one of the most rewarding feelings ever.
That's awesome. So it sounds like you do a lot of listening. Like, what do you think is a good talk to listen ratio? Like on average, is it like 60% listening, 40% talking, or 70-30? Have you thought about that?
Right. That's a great question. I've never really thought about that, but if I have to put a number on it, I would say I do a lot more listening than talking. I would say for me, it's probably 70-30, where I really try to get a good understanding on where the customer's at. And really focusing on the discovery, like, why are you guys looking at us? Why are you looking at it now? How, like, what would be an ideal solution in your mind? So I would say a lot of the talking is me asking questions or asking follow-up questions. So, my old manager likes to call this as active listening. So being able to ask good follow-up questions based on what the prospect has shared with you.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And then do you also do prep beforehand, like before each meeting? And like, how long what's your prepping process look like typically?
Yeah, great question. So for prep, due to the space time, and I mentioned that, you know, volume, high volume, it's very high volume driven. So naturally we don't get too much time for prepping just because we have so many calls throughout the day. But I typically like to do some basic prepping, going on LinkedIn, seeing who I'm talking to, what their role is at the company, as well as getting a better understanding on what products they offer, seeing if they have, Zendesk is a customer service software. So oftentimes going on their website, seeing what they have, what they currently have when it comes to customer service. So, and based on that information, kind of setting the tone when you start off the call, letting them know that, hey, I've looked at your website, understand that this is your role at the company, and then going off from there.
Yeah, no, that's smart. I like what you said, like the product is super important because it shows that like you understand the nature of their business and their business pains potentially. And then more specific to the customer success, customer care aspect.
Right.
So that's smart. Do you think, so in a volume based like role, how do you keep yourself from burning out? Like, are there any like practices or advice you would give to people?
Yeah, in terms of burning out, I think that kind of goes back to just being data-driven. I'm a very data-centric person. So I like to know what each task that I'm doing, what that relates to and what that might convert into. So I think to prevent yourself from burning out is really getting a better understanding on what each of the tasks that you're doing and what that represents. So ultimately it kind of comes down to, hey, how hard do you want to work? What's the number you want to get to? And based on that, it's yourself that's setting the tone. And I think preventing from burning out, going on vacation every once in a while you know, letting yourself rest. So I think taking a break oftentimes after working hard for a couple of months, that has always been super helpful for me.
Yeah, like what you said about if you're thoughtful and you're planning and you have a game plan, that helps you from burning out more, because you know that you can afford like these months for, you know, going off hiking or skiing and stuff like that, right? So you can plan that into your year, so that way you don't feel guilty or whatever, because, you know, most of the time sounds like you're planning ahead and you know what, you can almost project almost like what this month, by this month you'll be at, because you put in the legwork and the effort and, you know, the energy, right? So it's not, because I think a lot of times when we freak out, it's because we haven't have a game plan, we don't have something in place.
Right, absolutely. And that's essentially kind of the whole journey that I went through, all the way from starting sales, just being super lost, like how am I going to hit my numbers? And I think that's where the biggest stress comes from. When you aren't on track to hit your number and you have no idea what to do. But when you have a game plan in place, you're essentially just following that game plan. That, I think that really calms you down, and that takes away a lot of the stress when it comes to sales.
Yeah. I love that, because I think that's probably like the number one thing that most salespeople think about, right? It's, oh, how am I going to hit? But it sounds like you've been so thoughtful that you've even planned out the hours in your day when and allocating that, like almost like assigning an ROI for each of these tasks. So you know, okay, if I get these, I'll get the core done, and then the rest of the extra time, maybe I can walk around or, you know, spend time with my cat or something like that, right? It's like, like you're like planning ahead so that you do have free time and space to do other things, right? Whether it's like go grab a meal or something like that.
Right, exactly.
No, that's smart. Huh. So is there like a, I know Sandler Sales is like one of your, is there, because I know, I would say Dale Carnegie is more of like a mindset book. Mm-hmm. So do you read a lot of mindset books too? Or do you, because I know there's like pure sales books too, where it's like the Challenger Sale, for instance, and things like that. Do you read some of those as well?
I've said lately it's more on the mindset related books. Just being able to stay positive. I don't know. I really like to focus on the mental aspect of how you feel personally. Yeah. And I think that translates to a lot of things that you do throughout life, throughout your career. So I think having I'm a big advocate on positivity and being an optimist. Most of the time, I don't know if that's always good, because I'm just always the optimist when it comes to different, like all sorts of situations. So sometimes I might need to be a little bit more cautious, but I'm just really optimistic about things. And that sometimes comes back and bites me in the ass. But I would say most of the time it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I think there's something about, I call it law of attraction, right? Where you, whatever you put out in the universe, you bring back.
Right.
So if you are assuming that, oh, this meeting I'm going to have with my clients can be awesome. Like they're going to share with me a lot. They're going to be vulnerable and open up to me about their business problems. Like, because you're putting it out there, they're more likely to, rather than the other way, it's like, oh, like this person probably wouldn't be a good buyer. Like they probably wouldn't help me out, or they probably don't have time for me. Then you might get that, right? It's weird, but I think it's so true. Like what you put out there will come back to you.
Mm-hmm. It's like Murphy's Law, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever can't go wrong, can't go wrong. But it's the opposite of that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Believe it will go well. I think that also just changes your tonality. When you're talking to prospects, if you're just excited, you're curious, you want to learn about people's problems, I think that shows. It shows when you're talking to people, when you're writing an email. And yeah, I feel like people can sense that.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of like Maria Kondo, where she's like, thank everything, right? Like she's at the point, but it's extreme mindfulness, extreme gratitude, right? Mm-hmm. Where like, you know, thank the chair, thank the email that you sent out, that, you know, you put effort into it and it's like sent with love. And like, it sounds corny, but clearly it's working for her. She's killing it right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. So I know you also used to work at Nielsen. Like what was that like? Like, do you take some of that even into your day to day now? Like, have you learned anything from Nielsen that you can apply at Zendesk?
Yeah, I think, so at Nielsen, I used to be a data analyst, for CPG companies. So big brand names, conglomerates like Coca-Cola, Unilever, P&G. I think that's really where my data-driven nature comes from. Just so used to, you know, making recommendations, planning, using data. And I think that's really helped me throughout my sales career, and just being able to rely on numbers. Because at the end of the day, sales is quite binary. It's whether if you hit your numbers or if you don't. And at the same time, you have all these metrics in the CRM or in your day-to-day that you're doing, whether that be your conversion rates, your lead volume, your quarterly numbers, your average deal size. So all these different numbers, but what do they actually mean? And being able to kind of figure out the relationship between all these numbers and what they represent and how you can utilize these numbers to help you hit your number.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's interesting because I do think there's a common theme with most of the top reps are pretty data-driven, right? In the sense, like you said, that's like, hey, if I build 5X my pipeline, if I have a $3 million quota, then I would need to do 15 million and I'll be set, you know, in the pipeline. So it is interesting. It's funny because I feel like I'm not that data driven, but for some reason I still do well, right? It's weird how sales, like some people are just different, but it works out. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I would have so much to learn from you because I've always been so data driven. I'm curious in terms of, you know, what approaches you take when it comes to sales.
Yeah, I think for me, it's like if I am super present and like you said, like the discovery is everything, right? So for me, I just know like if I just load up my calendar and have as many meetings as possible, like I'll get there, right?
Right.
But I do think there's something about like the quality of interactions too. So for me, I'm just like, I'm just going to go above and beyond, like whether it's handwritten thank you notes, like after I had a meeting summarizing, like writing them a LinkedIn recommendation. So I'm definitely more like the personal touch where I'll, you know, like I'll remember their birthday and I'll send them something on their birthday. That's awesome. And like all these little things. And I think that just separates me because they're just like, wow, like this guy like really cares about me, you know? So it's different. But yeah, I do think, like you said, being more data driven at times can be helpful, right? Because then I can be like, okay, you know, I need like 1.2 million to hit like for this quarter. And then, you know, I think there's something to be said about that. Right. But I think we just have to be like multidimensional, right? I think it's good to be both where, you know, at times you can be extremely relationship based. I work with HR people all day. So sometimes like they are, and then obviously with the finance folks, like, you know, it's like, hey, here's the ROI, here's like the data and here's the graphs, here's the dashboards. Like, I think sales is interesting where every day I feel like you have to learn new skills or else, you know, cause everything's changing so rapidly.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that's such a good point. Because you're not always talking the same, not all decision makers are the same. Sometimes you'll be talking to HR, sometimes you'll be talking to finance, sometimes you'll be talking to CTO. And with different people, there's different ways to communicate with people in terms of how you can communicate most effectively. So some people are data-driven, some people are relationship-based. So yeah, it's so interesting that you say that. And yeah, absolutely. I think as a to be the best sales rep out there, you'll have to essentially wear all these different masks, you know. You have to be able to know who you're talking to and how to communicate with this specific type of person most effectively.
And to like double click on that. Like, do you think that, like, where do you run the balance or the trap of like maybe trying to adjust too much where like it's almost like not your style? You know what I mean? Or do you think like, well, no, like if they're the open mindset would be like, I don't necessarily have a style. I'm adaptive and I'm like agile. Or is that like the way we should look at it?
Good question. I'd say for me, I'd like to be more adaptive. But at the same time, you can't really lose yourself. So at the end of the day, I am data driven. But at the same time, I think when it comes to talking to prospects, I am more relationship driven. I like to build that rapport. I like to often say, you know, kill them with kindness, you know, be the best that you can be. And really provide value for your prospects. I like to think I'm pretty adaptive, and just being able to kind of change up your tonality, change up your approach, depending on who you're talking to.
And are most of your clients like more data driven, would you say?
I would say it's actually so different. There are data driven people. And then when it comes to data driven people, it's really simple. You calculate the costs, you really kind of show them the ROI. And if it makes sense, they're good with it. But a lot of people kind of require that relationship building. They want you to understand really how their business works and what challenges they're actually facing. So I would say it kind of spans across a lot of different areas. So some people are data driven, some people are more relationship focused.
Yeah, it does sound, I think it's interesting. Like, what are your thoughts on, because I, like a lot of younger people who want to get into tech sales, one of the advice I always give to them is like, make sure, like if whatever the product that you're selling, whether it's like marketing folks, HR folks, CTO, CIOs, like make sure it's the type of audience that you like working with, because you're going to be spending so much of your time with these people on meetings with them all day.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of younger folks don't think about that, right? They're just like, oh, I'm just going to accept the highest paying job like initially, right? But then I always say, well, if you don't necessarily like the product or you don't like working with that subset of people, then you're not going to be as happy. You're not going to be as successful.
Right. I agree 100% with that statement. I think ultimately when it comes to job picking, you have to be happy. When you go into the office, if you don't like the product as a sales rep, it's hard to persuade someone else to pay money for your product if you yourself don't even believe in it. So having the right product, having a product that you believe in, or working for a product that you believe in, and then second, you know, the company culture, you know, really believing in what the company is doing, what you stand for. And when you speak to prospects, I think if you have both of those things, when you're talking to prospects, people can feel that too. They feel like you're a rep that represents this company versus a sales rep that's just trying to hit their numbers. I think, yeah, picking the right product that you believe in and picking a company culture that you're happy with I would say these are the top two things that I probably look for when I'm job searching or when I was job searching.
Yeah. So what are some of the unique things about, because I do think in general, your space is kind of a crowded space, right? At this point, it's sort of a mature marketplace.
Right.
What do you think makes you guys different from like everyone else?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things about Zendesk is that customer service is rooted in our DNA. It all started off when our CEO decided to make a product better than Salesforce, or something that's easier to use. I think at the time there weren't too many customer service solutions out there in the market. And funny enough, I believe in first 5 to 10 years, we didn't really do any advertisement. We didn't really do any outbound outreach. That's crazy. It was just purely through word of mouth. And everyone loved the product. Everyone just started using it and everyone started telling each other. And that kind of got Zendesk to where we are now. So really fortunate to be working for a company that believes in what they're doing so much. And I think I believe that's really what differentiates us from a lot of our competitors out there.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think obviously if you were successful enough to be just word of mouth for that long, clearly like something is working, right? It's like embedded in the DNA of your folks. Yeah. That's interesting. Do you see like any like new players that like are kind of like, you know, you have to think about now, or is it like still pretty like, you know, like you guys still dominate the market share?
Right. So I'd say that when it comes to customer service, we're still definitely dominating the space, but there have been a lot of new players out there on the market. Not sure if I should share this on here because, you know, a lot of people might just be looking at and be like, oh, that's a great idea. I'm going to take a look at that solution. But there are definitely a lot of interesting players that are showing up. But at the time, I would say a lot of these new players are more focused on a single channel versus the omni channel. So being able to really consolidate all these channels into one, I think that's where we excel at. But we're definitely seeing a lot of new players that are more focused on small and medium-sized businesses who might only want to focus on one channel at a time. That might be live chat. That might be just using Gmail, but with a plugin that helps you manage all of your Gmail conversations better. I would say that's the recent trend that I've been noticing.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think like technology is like changing so much. It's made our lives like so much better, right? Like you can scale out, you can start a business with like one person now, whereas like back then you might need 10 people, right? But you can use 9 different softwares and still be able to start your own business. So it's pretty cool. And any advice for Asians who are thinking about pursuing a career in sales, but maybe their parents or maybe just most of their friends or, you know, either whether it's their aunts or uncles, like most of them like come from a more like either finance or engineering background, or even like you said, like a data analyst background.
Right. My advice would be just go for it. Just try it out. Especially if you're in your 20s, if you're a fresh grad, if you've been working for a couple of years thinking about career change, go for it. You're young, and you never know. It might be something that fits your personality perfectly. It might make you really, it might be a rewarding experience for you. You're so young. Try it. You know, you don't have any regrets. What if you find out you're actually a great sales rep at like 55? So, and I think sales is such a huge skill. I think originally how I wanted to get in sales is just like, oh, I want to be able to convince everyone. I want to be able to persuade anyone just with words. And I think that's such a cool skill. But as I'm getting older, I realized sales can be applied to every parts in your life. A lot of times when you're going on an interview, you're selling yourself to the company. When you're dating, you're selling yourself to potentially your partner. And if you want to be an entrepreneur, you're selling your idea to the world. So I think sales is such an important skill to have. And if you want to try it, just go for it. You know, I think that's one of the biggest thing about sales is just not being afraid to go after what you want. Sounds super cliche, but yeah, I'd say that's my biggest advice to anyone who wants to get into sales. You know, try it. It's good money.
Love it. And last question for you, what is a misperception that some people have about salespeople that just isn't simply true, not that you've been doing it for a while now?
So I've seen one of the biggest misconceptions that people have with sales is just that like all sales reps are sleazy and that, you know, sales reps don't care about people, don't care about the customers. But I think in this modern day and age, that's really changed. I've seen so many different types of salespeople. I think there's a lot of sales reps out there that are really just problem solvers. They really care about their customers. They really want to find a solution. They want to help. So I would say that's one of the biggest misconception that people have about sales. And that's really kind of changed my view on sales after being in sales for these past couple of years.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Irving. I think you summed it up quite nicely, right? We're problem solvers. It's a role where it's applicable to all aspects of life, whether it's just getting your friends to go to the restaurant you want or you know, like even just winning people over that you meet for the first time, right? I do think emotional intelligence serves you in so many different ways, not just paycheck, even though you know, the money's good as well, right? But yeah, thank you so much for your contributions. Like, just want to acknowledge you for like your humility, your patience, like you being an advocate for your customers, your prospects, you being a mentor to everyone on your team and being a leader by leading the way, right? Not by like boasting about your skills, but just by leading by example, and people could see that, you know, your commitment to your job, and ultimately that's yielding a lot of results. So thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast, Davidson. It was a pleasure being able to share my experience, just being able to share some of my thought process. Thank you so much again. I'm looking forward to seeing what this podcast would turn into. Excited for what you'll be accomplishing.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your day.
All right. You too, man.